This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
London in the 1880s.
Yes, my dear.
At night, a man chats with a woman outside the Pike's Hole Music Hall.
Now, these diggings are no place for a young lady to be alone.
Will you accompany me?
It will give me great pleasure. Will you do me the honor of joining me for a glass of fine sherry?
Only a glass of sherry?
Inside, a dancer in a bustier entertains the men and their female companions.
She looks like she could be on the circus.
Outside.
Oh, this fresh air is grand.
Now you must tell me your price.
You fancy me, eh?
I'd like to make love in the Grecian.
You vulgar old rogue. Away with you. All the crown's jewels couldn't buy that. Get out of my sight. You knave!
A cab driver is amused by the scene.
What a fine gentleman he turned out to be. I spend all my night guzzling bitters with the old sot and not a guinea to show for it.
Calm yourself, Sally. What did he want of you?
Never you mind.
Oh, I suppose it was something odd. But you have a living to make. You can't afford to be so choosy.
Yes, it's easy for you to say that.
That's a nerdy,
so just mind your own affairs. You make me nervy, you bloody cluck.
Now, that's not true. Be a lady and I'll keep you company. It'll be safer in my cab than alone in Chelsea. You could cross paths with... Then no more Sally.
I'll wager he'd fancy a two-guinea night with me, alone.
That's your choice.
So it is. And I choose to walk rather than set foot in your nosy cab. Good night.
Sally sets off along one of the narrow streets running through the Whitechapel district of East London. Erwin C. Dietrich presents Klaus Kinski in Jack the Ripper, with narrative description by AudioVision Canada, with Josephine Chaplin and Herbert Fuchs, Lina Romay, Nikolai Weiss, Ursula von Wiese, Olga Gebhardt, Angelica Arns. Streetlights silhouette a man walking through a colonnade. The streetlights cast Sally's shadow across a wall as she walks along, singing to herself. She stops suddenly and listens to the night. Then she continues on her way. She stops again, apprehensive, listening. As she resumes walking, another man follows her at a distance. Sally turns suddenly, but sees only an old blind man. She moves on. Entering the colonnade, Sally walks briskly beneath the arches. The light catches a single eye watching Sally. As she walks on, a man lunges out of the shadows and grabs her.
My child, where are you?
The blind man hurries toward the sound of the struggle. Sally grapples with her assailant, but he rips the top off her dress, exposing her. A knife blade plunges into Sally's abdomen. As the blind man taps the wall with his cane, Sally's assailant spins around, but quickly spots the dark glasses covering the man's eyes. Stooping, the assailant gathers Sally up in his arms.
My child!
Ignoring the blind man, the assailant carries Sally away with him as he runs out of the colonnade. The blind man starts to follow the assailant, but stops as the tip of his cane strikes a fragment of Sally's dress. Meanwhile, with Sally slung over his shoulder like a side of beef, the assailant carries her down a narrow stone stairway. The man emerges in the sewers beneath the city and drops Sally's corpse by an opening in an ancient stone wall. He crawls into the opening, then turns around and reaches back for Sally. Grabbing her arms, he pulls her into the opening after him. Later, hidden by the night, he rows a boat along a canal. Sally lies in the bottom of the boat, shrouded in canvas. Later, the man walks through a garden. Sally's corpse is slung over his shoulder as he heads for the large greenhouse nestled among the trees. In the greenhouse, a woman scuttles to the door and opens it.
Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening.
You're too kind. You brought me a beautiful doll.
Yes.
Ah, Doctor.
She presses his gloved hand to her cheek, and the doctor runs a finger along the vein on her temple.
She's so pretty.
The doctor carries Sally further into the greenhouse.
I'm coming, Doctor.
Nora hurries to catch up. The sign on the garden wall reads, "The Botanic Gardens of the Society of Apothecaries, London." On the garden gates, the Society's emblem shows the Greek god Apollo straddling a serpent, a bow and arrow in his hands. In the morning, Nora sings to herself as she trims the plants in the greenhouse.
Nora?
Huh?
Come and assist me.
Of course, Doctor.
Nora and the doctor each take an end of the blood-stained canvas sack containing Sally's body and carry it through the greenhouse. Outside.
Has my new doll broken?
Yes, continue.
They carry it across the grounds. Later, the sack lies in the bottom of the rowboat. The doctor climbs the stairs of a stone passageway leading up from the river. On the riverbank, two men sit on a dock fishing. Nora leans happily into the oars. On an isolated section of the river, Nora stands in the boat and glances around to confirm that she is unobserved. She takes the end of the sack in hand and sits back down. Removing the rope that ties the sack shut, she peers inside. Then she reaches in and rummages through the contents. She pulls out a clenched hand and opens it. An eye gazes from the palm of her hand. Nora returns her grisly find to the sack and bunches the canvas in her hand. Standing up, she struggles to shift the dead weight of the sack. Then she pushes it over the side. Taking her seat, she picks up the oars and rows away. In the city, at St. Petersburg Place, a row of gray stone houses lines the street. The doctor walks along the sidewalk, carrying his instrument bag in one hand and his silver-headed cane in the other. Wearily, he climbs the steps to one of the houses and lets himself in. Inside, he mounts the stairs to the foyer.
Is that you, Doctor?
Oh, finally, it's you. Good morning. Oh, you've been out on a sick call all night as usual, but you can't go on this way. If you keep working night and day, you'll be ill. Remember, physician, cure thyself. Come in and relax. You'll have a nice hot cup of tea.
Thank you.
Your patients can wait.
Oh, are there so many waiting?
Yes, but come in first. They've soiled the passageway with their muddied boots. Why do you waste your time doctoring those ruffians? You should have a richer clientele. This tea will perk you up. Do you take milk and sugar?
No, this will be fine.
Won't you have a piece of pie?
No, but thank you.
But you should eat something. I made this myself with pure hog fat.
No, this is fine.
It's an old family recipe, a Cornish pasty. You have need of the nourishment.
Mrs. Baxter?
Yes?
I believe my monthly rent is overdue and I am unable to pay you just now.
You really mustn't concern yourself about it. Don't worry, good doctor. You're always thinking of other people. Never of yourself. You're too charitable with your time and medical genius.
Oh, my dear Mrs. Baxter, I am much obliged.
It's my pleasure.
Leaving Mrs. Baxter's parlor, the doctor crosses the foyer to his waiting room.
Ah, good morning, my friends.
Lovely to see you.
Good morning, doctor.
I will be with you directly.
Don't hurry, doctor.
Yes, don't hurry yourself, doctor. We can wait a bit longer to get well.
The doctor removes his coat and hat.
So, my little one, you're not afraid of the doctor?
No.
Who's first?
I believe it's me.
The man follows the doctor into the examination room.
Is it your leg again?
Yes.
Get up on the examining table.
Oh, God bless me. What an ache.
The doctor washes his hands at the sink.
Now, this leg hurts me. But you'll fix it up for me, doctor, eh?
The doctor selects his instruments and medicines from a cupboard.
I'll do my best.
The patient removes his shoe and lifts his pant leg to bare his ankle.
Seems better.
Using tweezers, the doctor tears the skin away from an abscess.
Heaven and earth!
Blood begins to pour from the exposed wound.
To the devil with that rotten canker.
Well now, Charlie, even the devil wouldn't want this putrid abscess.
Oh, that burns.
The doctor applies an antiseptic.
There. That's all.
I feel better, doctor.
Fine. You should come back in 3 days for me to examine you.
Yes, I'll come back, huh? But, I've been under my luck. Only have a halfpence.
I understand how it is. You'll pay me when you're able.
I would have something to ask you, doctor. You are so generous, you must have a deal of money. Huh? I bet you have a treasure in silver.
And so then, that is my concern.
No offense, doctor.
That night...
Move on. Move on, ladies and gentlemen.
A detective uses his penknife to scrape up bloodstains in the colonnade.
Blood. Move on.
More of the work of old Jack the Ripper.
Scotland Yard's finest.
Exactly correct, sir. I regret that
two uniformed officers move the pedestrians along.
Oh, Inspector, all is
well,
in readiness.
Rupert, where are the witnesses?
They are waiting for you in the pub with Sergeant McCullough. A mixed lot there.
At the pub?
Don't worry, I warned the barmaid not to serve them any liquor.
Let's go.
Come along, Miller.
Rupert, a sergeant, leads the inspector and Constable Miller across the street to the Oliver Twist pub.
Inspector, sir.
Inside...
There's a Miss Higgins and an old man. Here's the inspector. Stand up.
Too much. Young man, it's a lady I am, and I'll only stand up for the Queen of England, you know.
Just so, milady. This young man must have seen service in the colonies.
The inspector looks over the blind man.
Take that witness into the next room for questioning.
Right away, sir. Come along, grandfather. Let me help you.
Rupert guides the blind man into the next room.
Sit down here.
The blind man takes his seat at a table next to the inspector.
I am Selby of Scotland Yard.
John Pritchard, sir.
Mr. Pritchard talked with the victim, Sally Brown, only minutes before she was killed.
Just so, sir. Just before she was murdered.
You believe, then, she was murdered?
But I know she was murdered. My senses are twice as acute than most men, and I have a sixth sense. I recognize the screams of a dying woman.
First he heard the screams of the woman not far away, and then he became aware of a struggle. He heard soon after an appalling shriek followed by the striking of a knife, and then the effort of one carrying a body away.
I imagine you doubt all that I've reported. These events are too precise for a man who cannot see. Remember that the ears and nose of the blind do the work of the eyes. With you, for example, I'm able to recognize you again at any time and any place in the world. I've captured the essence of you, that quality which defines you.
Amongst 10 men, you believe you could identify the murderer without a possible doubt?
Yes, I'm sure of that. The murderer, I feel, cannot control his compulsion to kill. I was able to sense that he was almost as terrified as his victim. Isn't that odd? He was consumed with strong emotion.
In fact, a madman.
Yes, insane. But a sort of madness which is puzzling strange. A madness which could be transformed into brilliance. The aura of this man gave me no negative feelings. On the contrary, he seemed as one possessed, not a sadistic killer.
You've told me very little.
Well, then, if you want more details of the murderer, I can help you. He's slight, strong, vigorous, but not a manual laborer, certainly an intellectual.
Why is that?
His scent, it was a strange odor I can remember exactly now. A rare blend of old books and fresh fragrance. Do you know anything about spices, Inspector?
No, nothing at all.
When one works with spices, the nose becomes very acute.
Lord.
The Indians are the finest connoisseurs of spices and most refined mixtures.
You must have served in India.
I learned much from the Indians while there.
Next door, Miss Higgins waits impatiently.
You spent a long time there?
Yes, many long years. I'll never forget India, as it was there I lost my sight accidentally. Then the opportunity to perceive the different odors of all the spices was presented to me. It developed my sense of smell to an amazing degree. The murderer smelled of several familiar odors, expensive soap, sweat, and very fine woolen clothes, and mild Turkish tobacco. And also an odor, Inspector, that you could recognize with much ease, I think. Alcohol.
Yes, of course, you smell of it.
Oh, but that's an easy one. What I detected was a medicinal alcohol, and then a real surprise, for I also caught a whiff of a rare medicinal plant of India. It transported me back to the colonies. In England, it's found only in a botanical garden. It is called Acma.
I really don't like to interrupt you, Inspector. Still, I arrived before he did. I can't wait longer. I left my shop in the care of an apprentice who is very young. The poor wench doesn't know the merchandise. I must go back there.
Miss Higgins, sit down.
I haven't time to sit down. Let's get on with it. If you have any questions to ask me, please do so.
I was informed you'd seen the killer.
I simply perceived an abductor. And he was carrying a poor girl in his arms. He looked a small black goblin. I saw no more than a silhouette moving through the gloom of the foreboding night. That's all. All cats are grey by night. Soon the fog began to roll and I could see no more of him.
You must have heard a scream, the sound of a struggle.
I heard a girl's voice crying in the night. First two screams and then a horrible shriek which pierced through my body, leaving me weak with terror. Then I believed I heard another voice. Was it the old gent?
Yes, but did you see the man kill the girl?
No, it was too dark and much too far away, although when he took her body in his arms, she wasn't moving or moaning at all.
You certainly must recall something else.
Do you want me to make up something?
Of course not. Could you identify the killer for us?
I'm not sure.
Can you tell me or not?
Well, who could say?
Only you can.
Then everything's up to me, is it? Well, I'd like to tell you, that crazy lunatic must be caught quickly. If I wasn't sure, an innocent man might be wrongly accused, and I only saw his shadow. Please, Inspector, I must leave. Oh, Inspector, I have a little notion shop on Old Compton Road. Bring your wife around. I've some fine linens, beautiful and not too expensive.
I would have you find me a wife first, dear lady.
A fine fellow like you not married.
So why does a lovely woman such as you remain unwed?
Now, I've become too straight-laced for marriage. And now, ta-ta.
My thanks to you.
It certainly has been a real pleasure.
Farewell, Miss Higgins.
At a ballet studio, several dancers practice at the bar, while one young woman dances for the instructor.
Way down and one and two and three, you're doing better. Way down and one and two and three, point your toes gracefully now.
Selby appears in the doorway and watches the rehearsal.
And one and two and three, Cynthia, extend your knees. Good. Oui. Well done, Cynthia. But what of your left foot? You mustn't let it drop, dear child. You must pay more attention, Cynthia. A perfect point. That's better. Ah, we have a visitor.
Cynthia hurries over to greet Selby.
Come now, mademoiselle.
I can't believe you're paying me a visit.
Why should you remain angry with me?
You were angry.
No. Well, it was your fault.
You came just to say that.
No, not at all. I had to see you again. Cynthia, I must talk to you.
It's very difficult for me to talk to you now because you're disrupting the rehearsal, my dear.
Yes, of course, the usual. Ballet means everything to you. You never think of anything else. You never have time for us or thoughts for me at all. Your life is only the dance. I have important work, a murderer to catch.
Now, don't bring that up again.
I know you find it amusing.
Well, you and I agreed to separate. We shouldn't see each other anymore. I make you unhappy. We must reflect on it.
You've decided. But I can't live without you.
You have a problem?
Yes, with you.
You must play cock of the walk. Very well, but I refuse to be your biddy. My career is too important to me. You must treat me as your equal. Maybe then I could be of help. I know that you're having a deal of trouble. It's that killer again, the Ripper.
Cynthia, we're waiting for you. Now, listen.
When will you be done here?
I don't know, but it will be in about an hour.
All right. I'll wait.
Here, beside me.
Meanwhile, in his rooms at St. Petersburg Place, the doctor sits at a desk, poring over his notes by lamplight. As he leaps through a textbook, he rubs his face wearily. Hunched over his desk, he fights to stay awake. Reaching across his desk, the doctor pulls a paper into the lamplight. His gaze flicks from his notes to the textbook and back again. As he adds to his notes, he rubs his eyes. The doctor tosses his pencil aside and rubs his arm against the cold. Then he glances over at the stove. Leaning over, he opens the firebox door. He stirs the coals to life with a poker. As the fire grows, he tries to rub some warmth into his arm. He stares hypnotically at the fire. Peering into the flames, he recalls a woman's laughter. Sips from a cup of tea he has pulled off the stove and ponders the laughter that haunts him. Later, he lies sprawled on the bed. The doctor stirs in his sleep. He opens his eyes.
Do you remember?
Cynthia, the ballerina, appears at the foot of his bed, her breasts exposed above her open, flimsy lingerie.
You called me to you. I am your slave. I'm your dream girl. For a guinea, you can come along. You can make love to me all night. Are you shy, dullard? Hurry. You've wanted me ever since the night you saw me coming out of the ballet studio. You're possessed by me. You undressed me with your eyes. I am exactly like your mother. A whore. I'll be yours for a crown. For a guinea, I'll do anything. I can be rather naughty. I'll make love à la française. Would you like that? Follow me. You can do anything you want with me. Don't be such a prude. I know your vilest secrets. You won't be sorry. I'll satisfy your most disgusting whims. And now this lustful lord leapt from his bed, is madly tossed between desire and dread, bewitched with lust's foul charm by brain's sick, rude desire. The love of a Jezebel is most exciting. Come, my love, I'm yours. Hurry, you desire me. Don't suppress your passions any longer. Darling.
The vision dissipates. The doctor sits up. Moments later, he strides across his attic room in his hat and coat, cane and instrument bag in hand. He hurries down the staircase to the foyer.
Oh, it's you, Doctor. Did I startle you?
I must go out.
You're not going out at this hour, good doctor.
Yes, a matter of urgency.
Oh, surely your patient can survive 10 more minutes, no matter how concerned you are. You'd do better to wait and call in the morning.
Mrs. Baxter, I really must go now.
I'd do anything to keep you from going out again tonight. I'll take that.
Please. I must leave immediately.
He takes back his cane.
But, Doctor, you're very angry with me. You're overtired. A cup of hot tea will calm you now. Sit down, Doctor.
He edges toward the door.
But, Doctor, sit down. I pray thee.
The doctor sits.
Lemon, doctor, or sugar? Did you hear me?
Pardon?
Lemon?
Yes.
There you are. I'll have a sip as well.
The doctor stares anxiously across the room.
Tell me, Doctor, are you content with your lodgings here? Well, they're not luxurious, I know.
It matters not at all.
Very well. Good.
Mrs. Baxter joins him at the table and sips her tea.
Doctor? If you could afford fancier lodgings, would you remain in my house? Or would you look for more spacious quarters?
But why these questions?
Mrs. Baxter stands.
Because I've given some thought to our little talk yesterday morning. Do you recall how I asked you to take more care for your own well-being?
She leans over him.
I know full well you live a lonely life with very little affection. You need a friend. You're a man of the finest sensibilities. Being all alone does not suit you. I could be helpful, if you would allow me to. But you make it so difficult. You mean a great deal to someone. Oh, I don't speak of passion, but rather of a sincere friendship based on the esteem and respect that a man of your nature requires. You should save a small part of your life for your own personal happiness. Why must you think only of others?
Well.
Now, we'll have our tea.
She raises his teacup to his lips.
Enough of your tea parties now!
Knocking the cup away, he leaps to his feet. Sobbing, Mrs. Baxter turns to the window, her back to him. The doctor quietly opens his instrument bag. Slowly, he slips a gloved hand into the bag. He fingers his instruments. Standing, the doctor moves toward the window. Stepping up behind Mrs. Baxter, he glances around the room. Then he reaches for her.
Please excuse me. You mustn't take on, sir. I didn't mean to hurt you.
As he walks away from her, she turns to him.
Do women always disturb you so?
Later, the doctor walks through the colonnade. Stepping out into a square, he stops beside a fountain.
Hey there! Hello! Say, love, wait for me. Wouldn't you care to rest a bit with me?
I don't have time.
Do you fear it will cost you too much?
No, that doesn't matter.
Well, then, tarry a while.
If you insist.
You shan't be sorry. I'll do my best for you. A fancy distinguished gent like you, my lord.
In her bordello, the prostitute leads the doctor up the stairs by the hand. He follows her into her room.
Come in.
She tidies the throw on her bed. Then she steps back and removes her camisole.
Sit down.
As the doctor sits down on the bed, the prostitute steps out of her skirt. She stands naked before the doctor as she removes his hat and takes his cane. Setting them on the chair beside the bed, she kneels in front of him.
Are you so timid, my lord? You should take courage.
She kisses him on the lips. Then she gently pushes him onto his back and lies on top of him without interrupting her kissing. Sliding back onto the floor and kneeling beside the bed, she undoes the doctor's fly. Then she uses her mouth to arouse him. The doctor strokes her hair with a gloved hand. He sits on the edge of the bed and looks down at her head as she continues performing oral sex on him. He caresses her back. His hands pull her closer to him.
Don't squeeze me so.
Alarmed by the sounds, the prostitute in the next room steps out onto the landing and puts her ear to the door.
I'm in.
Then she hurries down the stairs, holding her nightgown closed with one hand.
Maggie. Maggie, open up.
What's all the commotion?
I can't say. I heard such a carry-on by Jeans.
As she steps into Maggie's room, the door upstairs opens. The doctor emerges and hurries down the stairs. As the doctor leaves the bordello...
Is anyone with her?
I think so.
Jean's neighbor and Maggie climb the stairs.
Jean?
It seems they've gone on. Let's take a look.
Jean's amputated breasts lie on the bureau.
Jeannie!
Jean lies slaughtered on her bed, her sightless eyes gazing up at the ceiling. Blood drips from her head wounds to pool on the floorboards. Later, on the Thames...
Blimey, they must have ate quite well today. They're not biting.
Whoa! Charlie!
You can't make a decent meal on that.
You're better than nothing.
Hey. I got me a nice one on the hook.
Charlie pulls his line out of the water.
I must have skinned the beast.
But his hook is bare.
You hooked him up too fast.
I think he's taking the hook again.
Yeah, maybe you caught what's left of the beast.
As Charlie pulls his line through the water, he peers down into the river. A pale white hand comes to the surface on the end of his line.
What's this?
He looks like a...
The hand has been severed at the wrist, and a ring glints on one of its fingers.
Blimey.
Hey, Charlie.
Later, at Scotland Yard...
Good morning, Inspector.
Well, you're in a fine mood. Anything new to report?
Not that I know of, sir.
All right.
Oh, I almost forgot there's a madman waiting to see you.
What does he want me for?
He refused to tell me what his big secret is. He will only reveal his information to you, Inspector, not to a subordinate like me.
Selby enters his office. Later.
So you're the chief?
Yes, I'm the chief inspector in this district.
Selby's on the phone.
You must find old Jack the Ripper, then. You've got a job cut out for you.
Yes, I'm aware of that. I'll ring you up later.
My name's Charlie.
Selby hangs up.
And your last name?
Same as me, Dad. Mum didn't know him.
So it's Charlie, then.
Whatever you say.
Your profession?
Fisherman. I'll sell what fish I can. I'll eat them. Or give them away.
So I'll write no profession.
Bugger you, blackguard.
Charles, you've something important to tell.
To tell you? Not much to tell you, sir. Something to show you. Out of the Thames.
He gives a parcel to Selby, who unwraps it to reveal the severed hand.
This is why I came to see you.
Where was that found?
I myself caught it on my fishing pole off Penham.
Tell us, where did you find this precisely?
Off the bridge. I think this is another job of your Jack the Ripper. I'm sure. Blimey, you'll find it. This will show you the way. He sliced this one exactly as the others. After that, he threw her in the river. Look at this hand carefully.
Only a day or two, she rested in the water. It takes a fisherman to know these things. We catch a lot of strange things on our lines. Give this ring a look. It could lead you to the killer. It's like new. If I were you, me, I'd be dredging the Thames for more evidence. You must pay mind to the current. You'll find the rest of the remains a long way down the river.
Thank you for your advice.
Oh, but it's nothing, really. I'm glad to be of service.
Where can we find you if we need you?
Well, now, you want to know where I stay? Me, I move around, here or there. It's a dolphin you'll find me, like as not. Find me a pint now and then. Just a small pint or two. Cheers.
Good day to you.
Charlie pauses on his way out.
You see, Sergeant, I was to rights. T'was the chief I should have seen after all. You could say I gave him a hand, You'll mind your manners next time.
I'm at your service, Your Excellency.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Wouldn't there be a reward for returning lost objects to the authorities? It could encourage honesty.
Well, but, Your Excellency, the very best reward a man can receive is the esteem of Scotland Yard.
That means nothing. I was expecting something more. I have a larger cat to settle, the Dolphin.
Hello, Mr. Green. I have need of your best chemist. It's to analyze an exotic gift I've only now received. Yeah.
Selby hangs up the phone.
Sergeant, we'll summon Sally Brown's mother. She might identify the ring on that hand. And inform the Thames Patrol. I must have a team to dredge that river now. We could turn up some new evidence about the murderer.
Yes, that is to say, we'll put our hands on him. Oh, begging your pardon, Inspector.
Later.
Quiet down, please, ladies.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've called you together to help us employ a new method of police detection, which we believe may aid in our search for the sadistic killer, popularly known as Jack the Ripper. Let me introduce the artist, Mr. Willoughby. You'll give him your descriptions of the murderer, and he will draw a portrait of the man. Patiently, he'll portray his features following your descriptions. Each one of you have remarked special characteristics, a small man, a dark man, and such like. Especially you who think you've seen him at Pike's Hole.
Ah, but she saw him at the last, that angel genie.
An angel, is it? Suspicious character with the devil in her soul.
Miss Maggie, will you describe this man you've mentioned?
Yes, now, if I remember well, he fancied Miss Sally Brown was always ogling her. This man was quite lordly, could have been a peer. He had a distinguished profile, quite noble. He was of ordinary stature. He was always dressed in somber colours and wore a long cloak, if I recollect.
Willoughby adds a cloak to his sketch.
Fair-haired or dark?
Oh, he was quite fair-haired, streaked with grey, and he wore it rather long and shaggy.
What of his facial features?
Oh, la, I can't say. He was slender-faced, with a long nose, and a broad forehead.
Did he resemble the portrait Mr. Willoughby's been sketching?
Aye, that's likely. Yet there's something not quite right in this sketch. The nose is too short, the eyes too prominent. I really can't say.
Thank you, miss. Someone must recall other details that might assist us. Give this sketch careful attention, please. Try to remember. Ponder on it. And you, especially the ladies who work at the hole, you have seen him. We're counting on you. Concentrate on bringing that man's face to life.
Oh, it's bloody strange. I've seen this man at the pub often. Yet, for all that, I couldn't begin to tell you the form of his mouth or if his eyes are brownish or blue.
Do you have reason to believe this man was with Sally the night she was killed?
Perchance. Perchance. He stuck around for most of the evening.
No, no. I was right nearby Sally that night. I observed the man very well. He wasn't a regular, but a gent she'd had for the night. It's true, he wore dark-coloured clothes. Yes, but he was well-rounded. And he was also wearing spectacles.
Yeah, she's absolutely correct. I was waiting outside the pub all night long. The fat man was drunk when they came out of Pike's. They chatted a bit before they had a tiff, and then he made off alone. Seems he had made an improper suggestion. Blimey, Sally was angry because he wanted a queer type of rat. Bloody swine.
A queer type of rut. Collins, can't you give us more details about that?
Ah! Please, there is at least one lady present. Must you pursue this any longer? I'll wait outside if you'll permit me to, Inspector.
No. Go sit down. And, dear lady, you will not interfere with these proceedings. I decide what questions to pursue. You must know the ways of the world at your age, madam.
Oh, you can't talk to me
that way. Oh, yes, I can. Sit down.
Miss Higgins obeys.
You're the Crown witness. Continue.
Well,
You said a queer type of rut.
I don't know what he suggested. Sally never told me that bit. She was possessed with fury, but I began to jolly her out of her mood. I even offered her a ride in my cab, gifty-like. She said she preferred to trot on alone. She was a big-hearted lass.
Aye, one of the Lord's own angels.
A warning look from Selby silences her.
Let's continue. You described a heavy gentleman.
Uh-huh.
Not the man at all that you described to us. What do you say, Miss Higgins?
She glances at Willoughby's sketch.
That one is the murderer. What do they know, these scarlet women? I'm put that toilet who runs the Pike's Hole.
You old crone, you can't insult a
Calm
lady like that.
Calm down now, ladies.
I'm inclined to agree with Miss Higgins. Here's our murderer.
Goes without saying.
Ladies, if you please. Now, can you suggest any changes, miss?
It appears a splendid portrait, perfectly executed, though it lacks authenticity. Let me then suggest, that man was slender and just a mite taller, I recall.
Willoughby slims down the figure with a few strokes of his charcoal.
She sees him in her dreams.
Silence, ladies.
Willoughby adds some height to the figure, too.
Oh, good. It's him for sure. There's your killer.
No, which she is.
Now we've described two different individuals. One is the killer.
Inspector, might I add something?
Yes, Pritchard.
Pritchard, the blind man, stands.
I have the impression that you're right. We speak of two men, as you say, Inspector. In fact, I believe the one the lady mentioned, the same one which Maggie has seen with Sally at the Pike's Hole, this man is the true murderer. Proof I have that the man who insulted Sally is not the killer. I have a strong sense of smell. That's the reason why I know he couldn't have done this murder.
But how can you say that?
The cabbie told us the gentleman coming out of the pub was drunk as a lord.
Yes, that follows.
I'll remind you that Sally's killer smelled of the kind of alcohol we find at the chemist and not the sort you go out to drink at a pub, I swear it.
Inspector, the man's mouth was not so wide and the cheeks sunken in. Yes, that's it. He had a slight dimple on his chin, some wrinkles on his forehead and between his brows. His hair was straight with some unruly locks and rather large ears.
Willoughby adds the ears to his new sketch.
He wore a high, straight collar.
Willoughby sketches in the collar.
His shoulders were narrow. Oh, well, that looks like him. Indeed, he's the one. But I'd swear that the night Sally was killed, he didn't appear at Pike's Hole. Some time passed. He even sat at my table.
Charlie peers at the sketch.
He was a nice sort. Upper class, you know. He asked me for a stroll and offered me money. I refused to go.
Wasn't it enough money to interest you?
No, he wanted to give me a lofty amount. I was obliged to refuse his invitation. It's the monthly, you know. I'm that fussy. I would never take a man on...
There are things ladies should never bring up in front of the other sex.
I wouldn't lie about it. I have to tell the truth to the police.
That lady's too old to remember how it was when she was young. You know, she quit flying her flag the day of Waterloo.
Miss Higgins covers her face in embarrassment.
Watch your tongues, ladies.
Hush now.
Respect the dignity of Scotland Yard. Inspector Selby.
Constable Miller approaches.
What is it?
Miller whispers in Selby's ear.
Yes? All right. At your service, sir. Thank you, Miller. Mr. Pritchard, your remarkably keen nose made me skeptical at first. However, embedded in the hand of Sally Brown was found what seemed to be a pine needle. When analyzed, it was revealed to be from the tropical plant Akmau. This plant is distinguished by its unusual bitter scent, the very odor you detected as you approached the assassin. Charlie, tell me, this man, have you ever seen him?
Well, let's see, I may be seen him somewheres. But I couldn't say for sure where or when, damn it.
That night, a cab waits in the street.
You must forgive me for stopping around unannounced, but I had to see you.
You've had a difficult day.
One could say that.
Selby holds the door as Cynthia enters the carriage.
Oh, I've forgotten my bag.
Don't worry, I'll fetch it for you. I love to fetch and carry for you.
Selby leaves Cynthia in the carriage while he returns to her house for her bag. Cynthia glances out the carriage window to find the doctor gazing in at her. Her eyes lock onto his, and he stares back at her intently. She stares back at him in fright. As the doctor scurries away into the foggy night, Selby walks out into the street.
Anthony, that man the artist sketch passed by here. He stared at me so. He went that way.
Selby gives chase. Stopping, Selby spots a figure silhouetted in the narrow street ahead of him and takes off after it.
Right. Unhand me, sir.
Excuse me, I made a mistake.
You should be careful who you pitch into.
Sorry, sir. Forgive
me. Young sir, you're addressing Lord Salisbury, I'll have you know, by the way.
Selby returns to Cynthia.
Oh.
Lord Salisbury saunters off in high dudgeon. At Pike's Hole, a pair of naked buttocks wiggle beneath a red satin corset.
If you're feeling warm, come and see my charm. If you're feeling hot, don't talk a lot.
The doctor edges along a wall in the crowded room and pauses to peer at the scantily clad singer. Taking a seat near the stage, he removes his hat and places it on his table.
She's a fine fella. This Austrian gives some tone to this mean little pub. Cheers to her.
My niece found a bully to
entertain us.
She stirs the blood. She excites me.
Facing the back wall of the stage, the singer waggles her bare bottom at the audience.
My skin is fine. Lively, look at my lawn.
Yeah.
The doctor waves someone over to his table.
Queen, they're for Mistress Mary.
He pays a rotund flower lady for her flowers. As the curtain closes on Mistress Mary's act, the doctor walks out of the room. A man in the audience hugs his companion.
Lady killer.
Later, Mistress Mary walks out into the fog that swirls around the square outside Pike's Hole. She spots the doctor in his carriage.
Ah.
And walks toward him.
The bouquet is beautiful, but why wait for me out here?
Get in. The madding crowd and all the smoke.
Oh, I see. You prefer not to mix with commoners.
A policeman stops outside the hole to watch the doctor's carriage pull away. Then the policeman continues on his beat. Inside the carriage...
Let's go, giddy up.
My lord.
Well, it'll surprise you.
The florist mentioned you'd pay me 5 guineas. What must I do to earn it? I pray you no more, kind sir.
You'll see.
Ah, because I don't want you to do me a strange turn as one gent did. Not so long ago, an old dear I was with brought me to the cemetery. The madman wanted to have me there on top of his wife's tomb because it made him potent. I hope that's not to your taste.
No, that's not my desire.
Ah, love.
Fog envelops the carriage as the doctor drives into a park. Mary gazes nervously into the gloom.
Are you taking me to Sherwood Forest? There's such a fog. You're lost, maybe. Let's go back to town.
No.
You frighten me. Turn back. This isn't fun at all. Drive me back, please, my lord. Remind me well.
Carriage stops.
Sir, say something.
The doctor wipes mist from the window.
This is a gloomy place. You mustn't take your pleasure with me here.
The doctor caresses Mary's cheek with a gloved hand. His lips meet Mary's. Her arm encircles his neck as they kiss. Mary pulls away and sees the doctor's blade gleam in the night.
Help!
Springing from the carriage, Mary runs for her life.
Help me!
The doctor runs after her.
Hey!
Glancing over her shoulder, Mary sees the doctor chasing her. She runs along a path through the foggy park, half hidden by the swirling mist. The doctor peers into the night for a glimpse of her. Mary walks quickly through the trees, trying to outdistance her pursuer. Pausing to get her bearings, she moves on. The doctor, too, moves among the trees, hunting her. Mary walks deeper into the park, wending her way among the firs and pine trees. She glances around, seeking a way out, then moves on. The doctor pauses to stare into the fog, trying to catch sight of his prey. Mary stops to lean against the trunk of a towering fir, then glances back along her path, trembling with fright. The doctor leaps out from behind the tree and seizes her. One hand around her throat, he rips the bodice from her dress. Pushing Mary against the tree trunk, he leans down and tears the rest of her dress from her body. Then he pulls the knife from his pocket and plunges it into Mary's bare torso. Holding Mary upright, he kisses her on her mouth. Fully aroused, the doctor enters Mary, thrusting deep inside her as he holds her up like a rag doll in his arms. As Mary goes limp, the doctor lowers her gently to the ground. Then he lies on top of her and resumes thrusting himself savagely into her body. Crouched over Mary, the doctor sits her up and embraces her. Then he glances over his shoulder, looking for witnesses hidden in the gloom. Lifting Mary in his arms, he stands up. Carrying the ravaged woman in his arms, the doctor staggers across the park. Later, rain pelts down on the surface of the Thames. A rowboat glides through the downpour. Partly covered in blood-stained canvas, Mary is still breathing. In the greenhouse, she lies on the floor, her chest heaving as the doctor takes one of her breasts in his hand. His other hand wields a scalpel. Nora watches from the shadows as the doctor slices into Mary's flesh. A jet of blood catches him on the chin as he severs Mary's breast from her torso. As he wipes the blood from his face, Mary gazes up at him in horror, her lips moving soundlessly. The scalpel slices through flesh again. The doctor removes another piece of Mary and sets it aside. There's only a bloody stump of the the end of her wrist. The doctor removes another piece of Mary's body. Loosening his collar, the doctor surveys the mutilated body of his victim. Nora watches him somberly. The doctor stands up. In the morning, Nora washes down the greenhouse floor with a hose. The water carries Mary's blood to the drain in the floor. Out on the Thames, a rowboat slips through the fog. On shore, Charlie peers out through the trees. Creeping along the bank, fishing rod in hand, Charlie steps into the shadows in the undergrowth. Hidden by the foliage, he watches as the doctor rows to a dock. The doctor steps out onto the dock and ties up the boat. As he walks ashore, Charlie grins, recognizing his own physician. Later, at the ballet studio, Cynthia practices at the bar to the accompaniment of a pianist. She grips one ankle in her hand and raises her foot high above her head. Releasing the bar, she balances on the other foot, then relaxes. Cynthia drapes a towel around her neck.
That's enough for today. You've been working so hard. That's the best way to help you forget your troubles.
One hears that.
You'll enjoy going on tour. You're still seeing Anthony?
Shrugging, Cynthia stares wistfully past the pianist.
He's out of luck with you, and he's failed Scotland Yard in his search for the killer.
Cynthia looks over the day's newspaper.
People don't take kindly to an inspector who dallies with a beautiful ballerina instead of pursuing villains. The letters to the Times are filled with accounts of bits and pieces of ladies discovered here and there. They're crying for Selby's blood.
Cynthia smiles weakly, pats the pianist on the shoulder, and walks away. In her dressing room, Cynthia sits down in front of the dressing table. Removing her ballet slippers, she places them on the dressing table. Troubled, she glances into the mirror, then over at her closet. Standing, she walks over to the closet. She looks through her dresses, then turns to an adjacent cupboard. That night, Charlie creeps through some bushes under cover of darkness. He gazes up at the doctor's room in the house at St. Petersburg Place. Charlie climbs over the rose bushes up the wall of the doctor's house. Then he enters through one of the windows. Inside, he He slips down a staircase to the foyer, where a sliver of light spills across the floor from the doctor's office. Charlie opens the office door quietly to find the doctor seated at a table strewn with books, his back to the door. Sensing Charlie's presence, the doctor raises his head. Turning, he sees Charlie standing in the doorway.
You, Charlie?
We must have a bit of a chat.
At this hour?
Yes, I went to some trouble to come here at this hour and not to be seen coming here either.
But why?
You'd be wise to talk with me.
And about what, pray tell?
Ah.
The doctor stands.
Things of some importance. You see, I might be able to help you.
You're talking in riddles.
Well, if I was you, Doctor, there could be some nasty secrets I'd want to hide, well and good.
This is most confusing. I'm very tired. And Mrs. Baxter has...
Wait, that's not all.
Charlie jams the door open.
I might tell you Jack the Ripper, see? I wouldn't fancy you would want that, and yet I'm truly obliged to put her on guard. What do you say, Doctor? Do you want me to warn her? But I can keep my mouth shut, though I've proof. Precious proof.
How much?
I'll drop out of sight, eh? 500 guinea will do.
The doctor thinks it over. Then he swings the door open and steps out to join Charlie in the foyer. Charlie follows him to the stairs. Mrs. Baxter sits in her parlor, sewing. Hearing a noise, she stops and cocks her head to listen. Then she resumes her sewing. Mrs. Baxter jerks with a start. Dropping her sewing, she stands up and looks toward the foyer. Someone scampers down the stairs and out of the house. Picking up an oil lamp, Mrs. Baxter investigates. She climbs the staircase cautiously. She holds the lamp before her as she enters the doctor's quarters on the top floor of the house.
Doctor? Doctor? Is that you? Excuse me.
She opens the doctor's bedroom door. Then walks across the room. She blows out the gas lamp on the wall.
Wastrel.
Lighting her way with her own lamp, she walks out of the bedroom. In the gloom next door, she finds Charlie hanging by a noose from the rafters. At Pike's Hole, another young woman dances on stage in her corset. A cab stops outside the hall, and a woman steps out onto the pavement. The cabbie drives off, leaving the woman standing in the street. She walks over to the music hall, where a policeman waits by the door.
Uh-huh, a new fallen woman on the prowl? Aren't you afraid? You're just the sort old Rip enjoys. But don't be anxious. I'll keep my eye on you. You're easy on the eye.
Yes, with you nearby, I'll surely feel protected.
You may trust me, but what shall my reward be?
Dressed as a prostitute, Cynthia enters the pub. She wanders through the crowd, searching for someone.
You beautiful child, what might I offer you? Maybe a bottle of champagne?
No, my lord, I don't fancy champagne.
She walks away from him.
Oh.
Cynthia spots one man watching the entertainment intently. She moves across the room toward him. Stepping through a pair of velvet curtains, she reaches out and taps him on the shoulder. The man turns to her.
Good evening. Join me.
No, my error, sir.
She leaves the man at his table and moves on. At Scotland Yard.
Good evening, Rupert.
Inspector. This is the mother.
Why didn't you send for me directly?
You had need to catch up on your sleep, Inspector. Well, a gardener from Kensington Park has reported the discovery of some women's clothing, bloodstained and torn. Then Madame Hoffman arrived to inform us that her daughter is missing, one Marika Hoffman. She is an Austrian who entertains at Pike's Hall singing and dancing, so her mother tells us. God help her.
Good evening. I'm Inspector Selby. Has your daughter been missing for long?
Yeah, she's been gone for more than a
day. That's nothing. She may be with some friends.
No, false hope. She's lost forever. She always returned home to me after work. Although she lost her virtue, she knew I would worry about her. My child really was a good daughter. Why did I bring her to this wicked city? After all, what do you get? What is one poor, more or less? While you and your friends were dining in Mayfair with fancy women, my child was maybe being killed in Whitechapel. She might have been Jack the Ripper! Oh, I'm wasting my time talking to you. Couldn't care. You're just another hold, you all. Why is that killer still free? Why haven't you caught him? He should have been hung before now. Find him, you hear? The poor folks never receive justice. No, your justice is for the rich. Who cares about us?
Help her out.
A constable escorts the distraught woman from Selby's office.
She's hysterical, that woman.
Little wonder. Poor woman, I can understand why.
Hello, this is Inspector Selby's office. Yes, he's here, just a second.
Hello? No. And she still isn't home? I will.
A missing girl again, Inspector.
Cynthia hasn't returned home.
Later, Cynthia prowls the narrow, gloomy streets of Whitechapel. The mists swirl around her as Cynthia picks her way through the London fog.
Don't be afraid, my child. A pittance for a blind man.
It's Pritchard.
Yes.
Thank you, milady, for your kind generosity. Why are you out alone at this hour?
I look for someone.
You'd do well to take care, dear child. Someone in the night is not looking for you. Best return to your loved ones.
Why do you say that?
You are not the girl you are portraying. I can smell the scent of fine soap and lavender. But the costume you wear smells as though it was stored away. I believe you're wearing a disguise. As if you're playing a role, a part in a dangerous play, only your speech gives you away. The speech of a refined woman, not a tart.
She steps away from him.
Be careful, my child. This is a dangerous district. You don't belong here.
Cynthia walks on. Startled, a black cat springs into the shadows. Cynthia moves on. Farther along the street, the barman steps out of Pike's Hole to close up.
Hello? Am I too late for a tipple?
I rang the bell. It's closing time. Sorry, love.
Oh, just a talk, Gov. Please, business is slow.
The barman looks Cynthia over.
Well, come in.
You're a real gent.
This filthy fog.
Yes, it gives me a bad bellyache, this bloody fog.
What would you like?
A brandy, I'd say.
What brand, then?
Well, any brand, I care not.
As you say.
No one around.
Cynthia sips her brandy.
It's going bad for you.
Yes, it all goes bad by me now.
You're new at this. I'm off to figure the day's tick. It's been so slow, it can't take me long. So drink up quickly, my love.
Leaving Cynthia alone at the bar, the barman descends into the basement. A man steps out of the next room.
Good evening.
Cynthia turns to face the doctor. He removes his hat.
You look familiar. Do I know you?
It's possible we've crossed paths before.
I'm happy to meet you again.
Yes, so am I.
Let us celebrate our reunion.
He takes her by the arm.
Let's sit here. Well, would you like a rum, a brandy, or champagne?
A bit of champagne. I'll fetch it. The barman's a friend. I'll order it.
Doctor watches Cynthia closely as he sits. Cynthia hurries down into the basement.
Is there another way out?
Yes, that back door. Why?
Run fast. Go call the police. Jack the Ripper is here. He's in the tavern. I know it's him, and while you go, I'll try to detain him.
If you're sure, I'll go. Be careful.
Cynthia climbs back up the stairs to the bar. She finds the table empty. Opening the door of the pub, Cynthia peers into the night. She sees a figure disappearing into the mist farther down the street and sets out after it. The doctor steps out of the shadows. As Cynthia backs away from him, he springs, seizing her by the throat. Gathering her into his arms, he carries her to his carriage. Later, the doctor rows along the Thames. Wrapped in canvas, Cynthia lies unconscious in the bottom of the boat. At Pike's Hole...
You have your orders. Stay here as Inspector Silby has commanded. Don't let anyone go in or out.
A detective stations constables at the door.
Have the witnesses all arrived?
Yes, Inspector.
Where are they?
Backstage.
Thank you.
Stand back, everyone.
Make room. Clear the street.
Rupert clears the way for Selby and his squad of detectives to enter.
I order you to disperse this crowd.
Stay back, please.
This man, sir.
So you made the report?
Yes. I was just about to close when this girl arrived and asked me for something to drink. I was below when the Ripper arrived.
If you didn't see him, as you said, how did you know it was Jack the Ripper there?
The girl seemed to be sure of it. She persuaded me to run to the police.
Selby takes out his wallet.
Is this the girl you talked to, here in this picture?
Yes, she's the girl.
I say, let me have a look.
Of course.
This was the girl. She arrived here alone. She spent her time here. She must have been looking for someone. She wasn't really looking for a customer.
Returning the picture to his wallet, Selby walks across the room, thinking.
Who do you think she was looking for, Inspector?
She was looking for Jack the Ripper.
She is out of her mind.
She only wanted to help me find the killer. Well, she found him.
Yes, and now our task is to find her.
I might have a tip for you, Inspector.
Selby turns to Pritchard.
I went to the apothecary garden a day ago when, lo and behold, I detected the scent. I smelled it once more in one of the greenhouses found back behind the gardens. Remember that scent of the tropical plant I detected on the killer? It can be found in that greenhouse. Best get there quickly.
At the greenhouse, Cynthia lies quietly on a sheet of canvas spread out on the floor. The doctor stands over her.
Shameless whore. Now I've found you. You wanted me dead. You tried to kill your child. I'll have my revenge.
He reaches into his jacket for his scalpel.
You slut. It wasn't the child, it was the man you destroyed. Why did you do it?
Crouching beside Cynthia, he lifts her skirt.
You are my dearest enemy. Why must I love you so? I have to kill you. With your blood, my sins will wash away and you'll be purified. This bloody weapon will do the deed.
No! But you love me. Why kill me then?
Because you are a whore, mother. A corrupt bitch.
He kicks her.
You must suffer over and over again as I did when only a lad. You destroyed me.
He continues kicking.
I went mad with your laughter. Bitch, bitch. Why cry? Don't stop laughing. Be gay, you slut. You laugh so well. When you shared your love, your bed with every rotter who came along, you laughed.
Nora creeps out of the shadows to watch.
Shame, you laughed. When you caressed me with your filthy fingers, you laughed.
He takes Cynthia's hand.
When you made me sick with each caress, you laughed. A mother's hand, so soft, so dear, is not made for men. I love you, mother.
He kisses Cynthia's hand and lays it against his cheek. The doctor rips Cynthia's bodice open, baring her breasts.
No, not that! No, please! No, no!
He rips her clothes from her body.
No, no!
Grabbing the waistband of Cynthia's underwear, the doctor pulls it down, baring her hips and thighs.
No!
He throws her underwear away. Pushing Cynthia's thighs apart, he kneels between them.
No!
The doctor undoes his fly and enters her.
I love you. Who are you?
He plants his lips brutally on Cynthia's. Struggles to resist, he thrusts violently inside her.
The enemy, Doctor! They're coming!
Looking up, he sees figures pushing at the door. A Abandoning Cynthia, the doctor scurries away as the police break in.
Cynthia! Cynthia!
Selby kneels beside her. The doctor runs deeper into the greenhouse. Cynthia gazes up at Selby.
You've driven me mad with fright. But why did you do it?
I think I must love you.
Selby stares after the fleeing doctor.
Jenkins, stay with her.
The doctor dashes up a spiral staircase.
You run up there.
Catch him.
Gun in hand, Selby watches as the doctor flees along a gallery running the length of the greenhouse.
Surrender, you fiend. Give up, you're surrounded. We won't let you get away now. It's all over.
Nora strains to catch a glimpse of the doctor. Cynthia, too, looks up at the gallery. The doctor appears above them, slipping on his coat and gloves.
There he is.
Selby keeps his gun trained on the doctor. Glancing disdainfully at them, the doctor strides along the gallery toward the staircase, calm, cool, and collected. Cynthia watches her tormentor descend the spiral staircase. Walking up to Selby, the doctor holds his hands out. Rupert hands Selby a pair of handcuffs, and the inspector secures them around the doctor's wrists.
It's over. You're a prisoner of the Crown. Scotland Yard has hooked a shark this time. Jack the Ripper.
You'll never prove it.
Nora and Cynthia watch Selby and his officers lead the doctor away. This described version of Jack the Ripper was created by Audiovision Canada. The narrative description was written by Bill Williams, narrated by Bob Smith, and produced by Valerie Hunter and Marco Sora. For information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755.